light tells me go. Gotcha. coming to Nuts and Bolts track. We got a great track over here today. You don't need to stay here at Nuts and Bolts all day, but we do have five excellent speakers, or four. Take myself out of that. it's an honor to have Chase Hubbard here from the Warren Wilson College Farm. If you've been around college farming for a while, Warren Wilson College is really one of the biggest names in the business. It's also one of the oldest college farms in the country. In addition to being recognized as a leader in educational farming, the Warren Wilson College Farm is recognized in their local area as one of the most progressive farms in the county. Chase Hubbard was recently elected to the Buncombe County Soil and Water Conservation District. That might sound like not a big deal, but Chase got over 20,000 votes to get elected to that position. So it's our honor to present to Chase Hubbard.
Thanks, Matt. Appreciate it. Thanks, guys. I'm really excited to be here today, not just to share what we do, but it's been really exciting hearing what you guys do, and particularly hearing from students, too, having conversations with you guys about what you guys want out of your farm experience and what you get out of it. That's really cool for me. So Warren Wilson College is in western North Carolina in the Swannanoa River Valley. This is the Swannanoa River that bisects our farm here. The college owns about 1,160 acres. I manage about 350 of those acres as a mixed crop and livestock operation. We also have a 5-acre organic garden, similar to the kind of stuff that Matt and Jen are doing out at your college farm. We also have 650 acres of managed forest, so we have a forestry crew that mills lumber and provides a lot of lumber for the campus. And then the balance of the land is in central campus, dormitories, athletic fields, things like that. So of this 350 acres that I farm, and it's pretty obvious what the farmland is there, and the college outline would be something that looked like that. About 100 acres of the land is down in the bottoms there that we farm in a 5-year crop rotation, and the rest is in upland pasture that we graze livestock on. When you drive into the valley, the farm is really front and center. It's a big part of Warren Wilson and a huge part of our curb appeal. The fertile fields and the hillside pastures are really a great backdrop to a liberal arts education like you guys are getting here at Dickinson and the other colleges. At Warren Wilson, we have this unique approach called the triad. The triad is a combination of academics, service, and learning. All the students pretty much have to work about 15 hours a week in a variety of crews. There's farm crew, there's a garden crew, there's forestry crew, electrical, plumbing, teaching assistants, everything that you can imagine to keep the campus running, dining services, et cetera, we have at Warren Wilson College. The other component is service. All the students do about 100 hours of community service during their time there. And students can integrate these things as much as possible. They can do service that's related to agriculture or hunger or whatever, international stuff. The sky's really the limit for what you can do. Warren Wilson started as the Asheville Farm School back in 1894. It was a Presbyterian mission school whose mission was to educate rural Appalachian youth. So it was the Asheville Farm School for boys. So these boys came from mountain communities where they had no access to education. They got a basic education, and of course they had to eat. So early on, the farm was a big part of the farm school, and then transitioning into a 2-year school and a 4-year liberal arts college back in the 60s. Back in the early days, they would have grown a variety of feed crops to feed livestock, but also things like wheat for bread in the cafeteria, vegetables for the cafeteria. The campus was essentially self-sufficient. We grew some surplus that we traded in the community, but there was no supermarkets on the corner and things like this. And so it was really not something progressive, but just a fact of life at the time. Pork for the dinner table. College operated a dairy up until about the 1950s, when grade A dairy laws really just made it impractical for the college to keep going. But all the milk was served in the cafeteria and delivered to faculty and staff housing and forth and so on. A lot of corn silage would have been grown around the property in places that were really probably too steep to plow. So a lot of silage to support the dairy operation. Yeah, I think one of the things that I noticed, I was listening to Jen talk yesterday out at the farm, and College Farms succeed in many ways because of leadership. You know, hearing Jen talk about the things that, and you, Matt, that you guys have accomplished in the community and building connections and getting support and helping people understand what College Farms do for the total program in education is a huge part of success. This guy right here was one of the people in our history, Bernard Larson. He was a Danish immigrant that came about 1931. And he really, Warren Wilson at that time in the 30s and 40s was sort of a test farm, an extension farm, so to speak. You know, the kids that came to farm school got an education, but a big part of it was learning new progressive ag techniques. And so the mountain, surrounding mountain counties, you know, we were a big sort of test farm for them to look at and see what we were doing and try new things, which of course was new tillage, tractors, fertilizer, and things like that. After he managed the farm for about 26 years, his son, Ernst Larson, took over. So 65 years of one family managing the farm with a really strong old world work ethic, a sort of missionary approach from the old days of the farm school, really carried our farm into the 20th century. Ernst would have done farm practices that were common at the time, put out by State College, NC State College. And so he did a lot of on-farm testing and, you know, really all the stuff that was espoused at the land grants. While we would have still had some hogs on the ground, you know, we built some confinement facilities back in the 60s. And while they're pretty small, we still use these facilities today in our pastured pork operation as, you know, for a variety of different purposes. But still a lot of this... there would have been intensive corn silage production for the beef cattle operation. So basically all the land that's under tillage today and land that I would never till now was under corn silage production at the time to support a pretty big beef cattle herd, maybe 100 cows and then their offspring, which for our farm is pretty big. You know, we're really like a 70 cow size farm. They were raising about 100 at the time, and they were doing it with these energy intensive crops, but of course fertilizers were cheaper and things were a lot different back then. But still, you know, pastures would have been a big part of the landscape, and cattle would have been moved all around through space and time around the farm, just like they are today in our intensive rotational grazing practices. But up until the late 80s, the college had a butcher shop in the basement of Sunderland Dorm where we produced all our own meat for the cafeteria. Of course, HACCP and E. coli and all these different regulations made that impractical. But the pictures of old farm school and the earlier days of Warren Wilson really start to blend together with the pictures of today. You know, despite some different things and a lot of different nuance that we do now, a lot of things that we did then we do today. Assisting heifers, giving calves, and doctoring baby pigs, planting fields, baling hay, you know, whatever work that needs to be done, Warren Wilson students really step up and get it done. They run the farm. You know, I stand around with a cup of coffee and you know, try to act like I know something, but, you know, the college students, the Warren Wilson students are really, really what makes our farm successful. And we've got a tradition of really strong women leaders in agriculture, too, at Warren Wilson. We've had a lot of women come through our program and be in leadership positions, but both men and women over time have really made huge contributions to what we do. So this is the most recent crew picture that I have right now. Our crew's about 28 students. While it's really exciting to see students that go into agriculture, we've got several that are doing CSAs, mixed vegetable and livestock operations, organic dairies in Maine and Wisconsin. You know, they're doing a lot of exciting things in agriculture. That's really not what we're doing. We're really, it's a liberal arts approach. Students go on to veterinary medicine, human medicine, teaching, RAF guiding, you name it, you know, the huge range. And what we see is our function in the work program, and certainly what I see my function as, is really just to give students basic work skills that'll be useful for whatever they do. Communication skills, leadership skills, problem solving, planning, you know, all these things are really critical for any person that's going into, especially today's work world. But In the late 1990s, after all these years of production agriculture, the college, with a strong commitment to sustainability, stepped back and said, wait a minute, you know, what are we doing on our farm here? Let's transition to a more sustainable agriculture. Let's stop growing corn on the bottoms year-round. Let's do some stuff organically. Let's try some different stuff. That was in the mid to late 1990s. So a big part of our farm today is forages. You know, we have a cow-calf operation, so the landscape, even though we have several different enterprises, the landscape is, you know, dominated in many ways by our pastures and our beef cattle operations. So we have a cow-calf operation. Those mama cows perpetuate throughout the years and have a calf every year, and each of those calves is retained to produce grass-finished beef. So back, you know, years ago, land that would have been cropped with annual crops year after year is now planted to a diversity of forages, like alfalfa and red clover and puna chicory and perennial ryegrass and mature prairie grass. These are the mixes that we now raise beef cattle on, and this is the number one crop on our farm, forages. For us, it is the biggest part of sustainability for our farm. That land that's in forages is continually producing organic matter through our grazing practices. We're, of course, creating in this field, like this field, it's in the crop rotation, so we're constantly producing nitrogen for the next crop. And so just basically, and I'll talk more about our crop rotation, it's a 5-year crop rotation. 3 years of forages, these legume-based forages, plowed down to corn so we get the residual nitrogen, and then seeded to, after corn harvest, we plant small grain like barley. And then after the barley is harvested in June, we can plant crops like this. This is Sudex. It's a sorghum sedan hybrid that gives us some grazing for the cattle and also more organic matter. So they come in this field, they pretty much disappear. The next morning, all of it's gone in that paddock, and it looks like a Cuisinart came in and just, you know, kind of ground it all up. There's green slime everywhere. So this is really just a time filler. In the past, we did things like buckwheat. We did stale bed, like Jen was talking about yesterday, for just trying to burn weed seeds down. This is something that we've started doing, planting this high-energy forage here in a time that's a summer slump. When the cool season forages have slowed down, this gives us some good grazing with these warm season annuals. We also have some sheep. I used to manage a commercial sheep operation, and I've been really slow. So I've been at Warren Wilson for almost 12 years now, and people have wanted to get into sheep, but I'm slow to start new enterprises. I really like to ease into things and do it right. But I've just added a group of lambs and planning on heading that way. So I've got a lot of things like predator control and things like that to, you know, that onion to peel. But so forages being the base, we harvest them. We happen to harvest them with cattle, to a small extent, sheep now, and then also hogs. We have a farrow to finish operation of about 25 sows. So we finish pigs on pasture. The sows farrow out in huts in the field. We also use those confinement facilities that are modified. We've taken the crates out. We put bedding in there and creep panels. We use those sometimes during cool weather. To keep farrowing, but hogs are really fantastic grazers, particularly mature sows. We plant a variety of crops for them in this bottom that used to be one of our crop fields. It was called the sawmill field. Our sawmill is down there. Rape, turnips. This is a forage oat right here called Jerry Oats. But also, you know, bin run stuff, you know, bin run meaning stuff that we've combined, put in the bin, oats, barley, wheat, whatever it is we've grown, we'll plant those things too for them to graze. A lot of these pictures are really recent. This one here is from last December. This year they're grazing on annual ryegrass. So we mix it up, and sometimes it's just the seed that we have in stock. A lot of the seeds that we have are really expensive, so this is a good place to drill them out in the field and put them to work. We also have do the mobile chicken program. We've got, this is a group of about 200 layers that, this was our original house, called the Coupe de Ville. And this is the new one, El Pollo Loco. this is now a feed and water tender, so we've got two 55-gallon drums of water that then trickle down to these bell waterers here. We take bags of feed out, straw for the nesting boxes, et cetera, and then move this thing around the farm. They follow the beef cattle, the finishing beef cattle, rather, and so you can see down here where they're kind of following behind the beef cattle operation, or the finishing cattle, rather. So they produce eggs, some of which go to the cafeteria, some of which we use for retail sales. And, of course, a bigger part of their job, like Alex said yesterday at a church college farm, is to both scatter the manure but also to help with fly parasites. That's our biggest problem in our operation. And you know, the ways that we handle these traditionally in beef cattle operations are insecticidal ear tags. We rotate through an organophosphate and a pyrethrin-based ear tags, porons and things like that. And that's something we really wanted to try to move away from. But fly pressure is a huge deal with beef cattle. We talk about breeding long-term for resistance, but we really think that this helps. So in my mind, eggs are great, but this is maybe probably just as important if it helps us reduce the amount of agrochemicals that we use. And as of now, we don't use any of those products in our herd. We also raise broilers on pasture. When we started, we used all Cornish rocks. The breed we use now are called Freedom Rangers. Has anybody had any experience with the Freedom Rangers yet? It's a great breed. It's like a Poulain Rouge from France. It still has a nice meaty breast, you know, which is the issue with these meat birds. You know, everybody wants a chicken. You know, everybody likes chicken breast. But these birds are different. They take a little longer to raise out. There's a subtle difference in the meat flavor, partially because it's raised out longer, but there's also, in my mind, a little longer and a little more dark meat, and we think it's a great product. We process on farm now. This is a huge bottleneck. Students really like to process chickens. It's amazing, you know. Kids come from the suburbs and are like, when do I get to kill something, you know. Not because they're killers or anything like that, but because they want to be in touch with their food. You know, they want to do these things that, you know, that we've sort of stopped doing over the years. So butchering is a really popular thing on farm. But I don't really want to do any more of it. You know, we do like 800, 900 a year, and that's about what we can do. So they've started a new facility in the next county over, and I'm hoping to scale up, produce more chickens, because we have the grain, we have the land, we can put chicken pens together for $60, and then hopefully start cycling some poultry through the cafeteria. But, you know, things like poultry, having enough, you know, thigh pieces or something like that to just feed one cycle in a cafeteria is a tough deal. But anyway, the end result is some nice products that we, you know, as we retail these chickens, you know, we put five in a box and sell it for about $100, which is a pretty decent return. We do some retail sales. So our students, our summer crew, which we keep about six students around for summer. They work anywhere from 80 to 100 hours a week. We call it an internship. It's a lot of work. I think they got maybe 2 days off this entire summer. It's really a really intense experience, but it is, when students leave our program, they say this is probably one of the most profound learning experiences they had the whole time. It's a lot of blood, really, sweat and tears that comes out of the program, but in the end, you know, the students come out really, really strong and with a huge range of skills, too. So while we do a little bit of retail sales at farmers markets, you know, you go to the farmer's market and maybe make $400 in a good day, $500, something like that. The bulk of our sales is bulk meat sales. So we sell quarters of beeves, which is about a 100-pound package. So a family will come and pick up about $500 worth of beef. We also do 12ths of beef, quarters of hogs, loin packs, that we sell for a higher price, breakfast sausage, a variety of link sausages, ground beef. So students deliver these meat. We have some interaction with our customers on these days. But instead of doing the farmer's market, we do these where we have four or five pickups a year and we do about $25,000 per pickup. This really works for us. It helps us consolidate our sales into smaller periods so it doesn't interfere with our programs teaching agriculture. So students do get some marketing experience, and talk more about that as we go along, but it really helps us. So we've worked hard to develop our brand and labeling. There's a lot of complexity to what we do in trying to sell retail. Those of you that are in the business know all the regulations and stuff. We're registered meat handlers in North Carolina. This is just one of our oh, I guess maybe we have probably a dozen labels altogether for our different products. This is a picture from Thursday. Our meat sales manager Lily, who's from Alaska, works well in the freezer, is delivering packages of ground beef. So these are ground beef patties. Burger Day is a big day at the college, so the way our system kind of works is that we take our cull cows. Our cull cows go entirely for ground beef. Our premium grass-fed beef, we strip out the middle meats, the ribeyes, the New York strips, the filet mignon. That stuff gets sold for $8 to $18 a pound, and then we grind the rest, sell it to the cafeteria for a loss, essentially. And that's a system that we've designed that just worked with our food service at EXO. We've just kind of adapted over the years and made it work. This gives you a little idea. This is a dated pie chart of local food consumption at Warren Wilson College. I know that I've at least increased my... this would be both beef production and vegetables from the garden. I know that even just this year, I'm increasing meat production for the cafeteria by 20%. So I would expect that this is, you know, probably somewhere out here now. But you can see that this is a part of our local foods effort to try to do more local foods. We have a lot of work to do. Hearing some of people from other institutions is inspiring to see what you guys have accomplished. Of course, eating dinner last night and was pretty inspiring too. Okay, so the crop rotation. I talked about the 5-year crop rotation. Legumes are a big part of that. So while they're really useful for forages, which is a huge benefit for a livestock operation, in garden operations, we grow these cover crops and they serve a great purpose, organic matter and all these different things that we do. But we're sort of able to accomplish the same things in this system, but also put live weight on cattle and create some food. And, it's really magic. Every acre's a 43,560 square foot solar panel that's just out there capturing sunlight and turning it into meat, milk, eggs, or whatever it is we're using to capture it. So we do finish the beeves on these bottom lands. These are part of our crop fields. This is taken a week ago. These are Angus beeves that are finishing out on alfalfa orchard grass pastures. Scotty Marica. We also make dry hay out of this to feed our winter cow herd. And then after 3 years of this legume crop, then we go in and start tilling. We use a moldboard plow. Moldboard plows are bad, right? Yeah. So we use a moldboard plow in our fields maybe 1 out of 5 years. The issue is plow pan. People talk about that. But for us, it works really well. We're able to keep our field covered late into the season. The moldboard plow inverts the sod and gets us a quick kill so we can get a seed bed and come back with our corn in early spring because our rotation is very, very tight. The kind of windows that we have to jump through means that we're doing tillage all night long sometimes. Sunday morning, students are running tractors, 5 a.m., 8 o'clock at night, whatever, so that we're hitting timing, soil moisture, and things like this at the optimum time. So we come in, we do our tillage. This whole field would then turn brown. We also, this is our feed waste shed where we, because we're a pasture-based operation, we're not able to capture a lot of manure to use for fertility. But this place where we winter our cows, we have a wagon, we feed them hay underneath there, they deposit their manure. We then take this, clean out the shed, and put it in windrows. We turn it with our manure spreader, similar to the one you guys have out there. And that's our corn fertility. After planting, we come back, we use a rotary hoe. I apologize, I don't have any pictures of a rotary hoe because I realize many of you may have not seen one of those in action. But just as soon as the plant germinates, we go with the rotary hoe, which kills weeds in the white thread stage. And then we come back with a Lilliston rolling cultivator. 1 out of 50 students really has the ability to run equipment well enough to run this cultivator like this. And they're all running it with me barking behind them, right, left, because, any little turn to one side, can kill corn. So it's funny, the things that students tell each other from year to year, like, oh, you don't want to cultivate. or that it's, kind of a coveted position, that these are things that... just the lore that's passed down from student to student. So we also do some soybeans. I'm trialing that. You know, we grow all this feed now as a cash crop to feed our livestock operations. We also sell some additional feed to local pastured pork and poultry producers. Because we're really one of the only grain producers in our area. Nobody really produces grain. The dairies do silage, but you know, the animal producers that do sort of what we're doing have to buy this feed, an organic feed, from a long distance, and it's incredibly expensive. So we started working with soybeans. They're challenging for me, and I can't feed them raw. You know, we don't feed cattle soybeans. They can eat raw beans, but I have to process them. So that means a roaster. The roaster is about $18,000. It's just one more thing, and an added layer of complexity in a farm that's already pretty complex. I sort of get paid the same no matter how much work I heap on myself. So in the future, I'd really like to work in this direction and be able to be entirely self-sufficient with our feed. But right now, we have to buy soybean meal to supplement. This is our regional agronomist just talking to our corn crop. It's really fun to have them and seed salesmen come out. We grow a Blue River organic hybrid corn. It's 105 DTM corn, days to maturity corn. But to have them come out and pick our ears and look at it and say, "What variety is this? What'd you put on this?" And just sit there in awe, you know, that it's not biotech corn and all these different kind of things is really very satisfying. So our farm average is maybe 130, 140 bushel corn, which is, you know, average or above average for North Carolina. But we've also grown 200 bushel corn on our good corn land in some of our best fields. And that's good. Maximizing production, you know, we talk about open pollinated corns and things like this and all this genetic diversity. But from my perspective, if I'm going to grow a field of corn, I would much rather get 130, 150 bushels per acre than 40 or 50, just as an efficiency thing, as a way to maximize the productivity of the land. But these things are also important, so in the future, maybe we'll continue to experiment with some of these open pollinated corns like we have in the past that have been really disappointing in terms of yields. So we harvest the corn. Our corn is still standing right now. I wish it was in the bin, but right around this time of year, we're looking to pick corn when it gets under about 17% moisture. We do have storage. We have some nice grain facilities. Back years ago when I started, we stored on the slab. We'd come in with a dump truck and dump our corn there, and it would sit there and rot, and we'd try to keep it fresh, but that was really depressing to spend all this time producing corn and watch it rot. So it's nice to have grain facilities now. We can run air through it. You know, we've got these big fans and perforated floors, runs air through the top. You can see the steam coming through there. After we harvest corn, just last year I started gleaning the cornfields with the cows. Typically we're in a huge hurry to get seeded down to our winter annual, which is pretty much barley now. Barley's our most successful crop. We used to do oats and wheat. The wheat we really didn't have a use for. We didn't have a good way to mill it for grain in the cafeteria. It wasn't a good livestock feed. Oats shattered too much in the field. Barley's a really good crop. But the cows really help make a nice seed bed. And it also gives them some feed. You know, we can kill some time in there, take some pressure off the pastures, and get some feed from gleaning corn. So I apologize, I don't have any pictures of planting barley, but you know, essentially it looks like little strips of grass. It's a grass. It's a winter annual, so it's sort of green over the winter. And then this would be in May as it's starting to ripen in the soft dough stage. This was this past year's barley crop. And then about the first, second week of June, you know, we get this Amber Waves of Grain program going where it's time to go in and harvest barley. And not only do we get you know, the grain, which barley is an equal exchange in energy pretty much for corn for our feed rations, but we also get this great bedding that we bale. This year we made about 1,000 bales of straw. In the past we've made as many as several thousand bales. We use part of that and then we can sell those for $4 to $5 a bale. So it's actually, you know, it can really generate some money. After that barley is harvested, I showed you the video of the summer annuals. We happen to use these brown midrib varieties of Sudex or sorghum Sudan, but we've also done Sudan hybrids, millet, these are really fun crop to grow because it produces a huge amount of biomass, and the cows love it. These new varieties are super high energy. But then, you know, come August or something like that, when there's still forage there, it's about that tall this year, and I really wanted to graze it, but I had to